Hello, everyone. I'm Emily Rapley, Managing Editor with Becker's Healthcare. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Becker's Healthcare podcast series. I'm pleased to be joined today by a special guest to discuss the current landscape of revenue cycle management in physician practices. We are thrilled to be joined today by a leader from Allscripts for our discussion. I'm pleased to introduce Paola Turchi. Paola has been in the revenue cycle space for over 15 years. She's a certified professional coder through the AAPC, a certified healthcare financial professional through HFMA, and a certified medical practice executive through the American College of Medical Practice Executives at MGMA. Paola has a Green Belt Six Sigma certificate from the University of California, Irvine, and a Change Leadership certificate from Cornell University. For the past several years at Allscripts, she has provided consulting services to over 250 practices, ranging from one doctor specialty practices to large 1,200 physician integrated delivery networks. Paola has also spoken at MGMA National and HFMA regional conferences on the topics of revenue cycle and managing self-pay collections. Paola, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
Excellent. So to kick off our conversation, can you just give us a lay of the land here of what we're seeing when it comes to the revenue cycle?
So most physician medical practices will face similar challenges when it comes to revenue cycle management in 2020. We will continue to see a rise in consumerism and patient debt, with practices implementing changes to enhance the self-pay collection processes. Margins will continue to decrease, unfortunately, requiring practices to closely look at their operating costs and concentrating on avoiding revenue leakage by reviewing unbilled services, underpayments, denial management. We also have a lot of billing requirements and complexities. They will continue to change, and they will call for more automation and skilled employees. Analytics is another area of great importance for 2020. We cannot improve what we cannot measure. There are also a lot of uncertainties regarding alternative payment models that focus on value versus volume, and challenges that practices will have with the ability to leverage technology as they struggle to keep up with system upgrades and functionality utilization. All of these challenges will require organizations to closely review the performance of their revenue cycle and evaluate the efficiency and efficacy of their processes to succeed in 2020.
Interesting. So in this environment, how can our listeners at independent physician practices gauge the health of their own revenue cycles? Specifically, are there any key performance indicators or benchmarks for those KPIs that you'd recommend looking to?
There are hundreds of metrics that track a variety of performance indicators in a medical practice. And although each of them is important, it would be key to start reviewing the data at a macro level and then digging deeper as needed. To measure the success of the revenue cycle, practices need to review the following metrics. One, productivity trending for the past 12 months, including gross and net collection percentages and average charges, payments, and adjustments per encounter. Practices might further break this data down by procedure code, location, and payer. The main purpose of this report are to, one, identify trends, and two, benchmark collection rates against industry standards. Another one is evaluation and management volumes, including MGMA comparisons for volume distribution, and then Medicare allowables to evaluate reimbursement. Organizations might also want to include other procedure codes, such as their top 5 or 10 surgical codes. Another report will be a point of service collections to check the efficacy of their self-pay collection processes. Another one, the payer mix to trend the practice revenue coming from private insurance versus government insurance versus self-paying individuals. And lastly, the cost to collect, so they can fully understand how much it is costing the organization to bring in the revenue. And understanding this number will assist them in identifying opportunities to control or cut costs. Now, regarding accounts receivable metrics, organizations need to track and benchmark first the aging of their accounts receivable, breaking it down by insurance versus self-pay, and really focusing on accounts over 120 days. It is also known that the longer it takes to collect, the less likely it is to collect those dollars. So they need to make sure to exclude credit balances, which understate these numbers. Another report is an open balances for fully unpaid claims by insurance and procedure code, This metric is key to identify why insurances might be delaying payment. Another one will be denial rates with denial reasons. The goal is to keep the denial rate below 5%. Achieving this goal is crucial to understanding why the claims are being denied, so the organization can put processes in place to avoid those denials moving forward. And just to give you an idea, according to MGMA, 90% of the most common denial reasons are actually preventable. And lastly, we'll have the days in accounts receivable by insurance carrier. This metric helps organizations identify how long it takes them to get paid for their services. The idea is that if Medicare usually pays within 14 days, the organization wants to make sure their days in accounts receivable for this particular insurance reflects a similar number. Other metrics to consider, especially if we're looking to capture additional dollars, are 100% of adjusted services to make sure that they are not leaving money on the table and adjusting services that should have not been adjusted off. And then underpaid claims to make sure that insurance companies are paying according to their contracts. It is key to highlight that practices need to have access to their contracts. I know this sounds very obvious, but you will be surprised how many organizations do not know how much they should be getting paid for their services. It is also key that these contracts are uploaded in their practice management systems to efficiently track discrepancies, because the reality is that the harder it is to review these numbers, the less likely they are to do it.
Absolutely. So in reviewing these KPIs, if a physician practice identifies a weak area in their revenue cycle, how can they go about problem solving for that?
So once practices have identified a few opportunities based on the results of their key performance indicators, they have a starting point to identifying processes that need to be optimized. However, before they roll their sleeves up and start making all these changes, it is key to understand the workflows, tools, and resources being leveraged to support their revenue cycle operations. They need to start with putting together a team of subject matter experts for each area. A well-represented team includes managers and frontline employees that will embrace open communication. Then they can use what I call the what are they doing, how are they doing it, and why are they doing it approach to comprehend each step in the process. If necessary, they can dig deeper by using the five whys technique. And this technique is utilized to identify the root cause of a problem and implement solutions to prevent it from recurring. It's important to remember that at this point, the organization is just conducting a discovery and is not necessarily making or recommending any changes. After all these processes affecting the revenue cycle have been reviewed, real-time observations might be beneficial. Observing employees might bring up new elements that were not discussed during the discovery process. It's really amazing how efficient employees get at their inefficiencies, which really prevents them from realizing that processes need to be optimized. These inefficiencies are usually identified while watching the end users perform their tasks and interrupted in their own environment. It is key to anticipate that in the beginning, getting efficient is going to be slow. They are going to feel awkward, but practices should not hesitate and should encourage the change to obtain better results in the long run.
Got it. Okay, so why don't we dive into one of these areas of opportunity to give our listeners here an example. So what could practices do to refocus their revenue cycle to optimize self-pay collection processes?
So to start, they need to understand clearly their current processes. What steps are they taking to collect patient responsibility? What tools are they utilizing to support their efforts? How much is costing them to collect these dollars? Given the rise of the high deductible health plans, the goal should be to automate as many processes as possible to support the collection of patients' responsibility, either before the appointment or at the time of service. So we're talking about moving what has been typically been done in the back office to days, sometimes months after the patient leaves the practice, all the way to the front. To achieve this goal, practices can build a team of subject matter experts once again to gather as much information as possible about these processes. During the discovery phase, they need to identify what is being done, where it's being done, and clearly call out any workflows that require manual intervention. For example, based on my experience, some of the most common labor-intensive processes that happen in the front end include the manual verification of patient addresses, meaning the users are having to verbally verify the address of the patients versus having an automated process that checks these addresses in the system against the US Postal Service. Another one is the eligibility verification, where users are having to manually check the patient's eligibility benefits online for each patient on each insurance versus having a tool that allows them to do it automatically in a batch mode or in real time when the patient shows up for the appointment. Another one is calculating out the pocket estimates for the patients. This one is sometimes so challenging and labor intensive that organizations give up and decide to wait until after the insurance processes the claims to notify the patient of their financial responsibility. As you can imagine, this is not necessarily well received by patients who really get a sticker shock when they receive their first payment. In the back end, I usually see a lack of automation used to track delinquent accounts. There are many practices which are printing reports on a monthly basis to identify these accounts and are manually making notes on that piece of paper to document their efforts. Others are printing the statements and manually reviewing them to determine what to do with the account depending on the age of the balance. These are very, very manual intensive processes. I have also seen practices manually generating collection letters in Microsoft Word, one patient at a time, and manually making the change of the address and making phone calls. Another process that is usually very labor intensive is the tracking and processing payment plans. I have seen accordion files inside cabinets with the patient's credit card information filed away under a specific day, so users can pull each document and manually process these transactions on a monthly basis. Here, we don't only have a lot of manual processes, we also have a non-compliant one. Needless to say, there are many other processes that practices are handling manually today, but these are some of the most common ones I have seen during my assessments. Once practices have identified which workflows will need to be optimized, they need to create a plan to roll out new tools and/or processes. They need to understand which changes will give them the greatest return in the shortest period of time. And it is always great to start a process improvement initiative with a quick, measurable win. Practices need to make sure that they are measuring the outcomes of each initiative and are consistently evaluating its success while making modifications to the processes as needed.
Excellent. Thank you so much for walking us through that. So it sounds like automating as much as possible is really the way to go there.
Absolutely.
So my next question here for you, Paula, a lot of the revenue cycle discussion that we hear is often focused on hospitals. Can you talk a little bit about what opportunities are unique to the revenue cycle in the independent physician practice setting?
For the most part, independent practices are dealing with lower patient balances, and the services they are providing are to patients that are not having a medical emergency. The lower the balances, the easier it is to collect them. Consequently, one of the biggest opportunities that practices have is to proactively let patients know how much they will owe for the services and offer diverse payment options to make it easier for the patients to pay for their services. The easier it is to pay, the more likely it is to collect from the patient.
Perfect. So for physician groups taking on this kind of transformation, is there anything that they should be watching out for?
Some changes will be quick and easy, but others will take time to implement. The key is to be consistent and measure the adoption and success of the initiative. I will suggest that regardless of the scope of the project, the leader team should develop a clear plan to implement the change. Organizations need to make sure that they assemble a team that embraces change and will help them sell the idea to others. The staff buy-in is key for adoption. If applicable, they can use a process improvement methodology such as the Plan, Do, Study, and Act, also known as the Deming's PDSA cycle, to help them track their success while implementing the change.
Fantastic. Okay, so to begin wrapping up here, what can physician groups do to improve their bottom line?
So here are top areas I'm seeing medical practices address to implement their bottom line. One, remove the silos that exist between the front end and the back end revenue cycle operations. They all should operate under one revenue cycle umbrella. Two, automate processes such as prior authorizations and eligibility verification. These are the most common denial reasons practices are seeing today. Three, submit the claims and statements on a daily basis. For example, if they send statements on a daily basis, they will get payments on a daily basis that the patients will call on a daily basis, versus sending statements weekly or monthly, and then getting inundated with patient phone calls a few days later. 4, develop a process to efficiently capture and track and bill services, especially those services that are provided at the hospital. These are usually the hardest ones to track. Create a report that tracks hospital rounds and automates the identification of possible missing charges. 5, refocus efforts and resources in developing strategies to better engage consumers on healthcare costs, such as offering comprehensive financial counseling, payment plans, and online portals for price estimates and payments. When patients do not know what and how to pay, they delay or even avoid paying for these services. 6, consider emerging technologies that include robotic process automation and artificial intelligence to help increase economies of scale across revenue cycle operations. 7, implement a robust analytics tool that allows them to measure the health and efficiency of their organization. You cannot improve what you do not measure. 8, constantly optimize the utilization of technology to leverage the functionality and enhance processes. And 9, consider seeking expertise outside the organization and partner with a reputable revenue cycle management company to help the organization really capitalize on all the opportunities and possibly decrease the cost to collect. One of the biggest challenges organizations face is not identifying the opportunities, is the planning and the implementation of continuous monitoring of these opportunities. It's usually a bandwidth problem.
Got it. Excellent. So you mentioned choosing a partner. Any tips for choosing an IT partner for this?
Yeah, let me give you 4. So the first one, identifying that they have experience, especially in the revenue cycle side, that they have a proven track in providing value and can show the outcomes. Also, that they have flexibility to meet your needs and not forcing you to meet their needs. And lastly, they have a corporate stability to ensure they will be around in the future.
Fantastic. So before I close out here, let's recap for our listeners. What are 3 quick takeaways that we can leave with them today?
Okay, so let's see. 1, keep track of your key performance indicators and implement tools that will help you automate the analysis. The easier they make it, the more likely is going to be done. 2, continue providing process improvements opportunities and foster a culture that embraces change. Healthcare is changing on a daily basis, so this is very important. And 3, they don't have to do it alone. There are reputable revenue cycle management organizations that have the expertise, resources, and technology to help improve their bottom line while possibly decreasing their overall cost to collect.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Paola, for your time today and those thought-provoking responses. On behalf of Becker's Healthcare, I'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Allscripts. And to our listeners today who want to hear more, you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.